Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Filmcast, a podcast about movies. I'm David Chen, and just like Toy Story 5, this episode of the podcast is going to give me a dose of what it's like to be replaced by a newer, better model. Joining me today is Devinder Hardwar.
Consider me, team. Leave Bonnie alone. Stop torturing her. God.
And joining us today for our episode covering Toy Story 5 is senior reporter from IO9 and Gizmodo, frequent contributor to our summer movie wager, Jermaine Lucier.
Five Toy Stories in this economy?
Welcome to the podcast, everyone. So today's episode is going to be just a little bit strange because, first of all, I have not seen Toy Story 5. And also, you may have noticed Jeff isn't here. He will be here for our Toy Story 5 review, but due to scheduling reasons, couldn't be here for our opening segment. So,
due to issues around kids, very thematically appropriate.
Absolutely here. Correct. Yeah. Nothing serious or anything, but just
yeah,
like
the scheduling. The toys went crazy. He's just got to like figure it out.
So it's going to be a little bit of a shorter episode today. That said, what we are going to do is start with a film court segment and then move straight into our review of Toy Story 5. So let's do it, folks. Let's start with another rendition of that segment where we adjudicate your film-related dilemmas, the Slash Film Court. Slash Film Court. Slash Film Court. Slash Film Court. You can't handle the truth. Slash Film Court. Slash Film Court. Court's adjourned. Slash Film Court. Slash Film Court, the segment where we adjudicate your movie-related dilemmas. You can always email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. This week, Zion emails into slashfilmcast@gmail.com. This is the subject line of the email. My friend thinks everything is a masterpiece. Filmcast crew, I need the Slash Film Court to adjudicate a matter of critical epistemology. My esteemed friend Casey is a cinematic and TV enthusiast who exhibits an almost indiscriminate appreciation for every show he encounters. He places Star Wars Andor in the same categorical framework as The Mandalorian, despite the former's demonstrably superior narrative architecture and thematic resonance. He views Empire Strikes Back and The Book of Boba Fett with equivalent enthusiasm, conflating competent but uneven execution with genuine artistic excellence. Casey and I are both ardent science fiction devotees, and we share that passion. Yet he perceives shows like Severance and Pluribus with the same undifferentiated enthusiasm he reserves for more pedestrian fare like Discovery and Lower Decks. These aren't terrible shows, mind you, but I would consider them subpar in a multitude of narrative and cinematic areas. I genuinely venerate Casey, and his unbridled optimism is endearing. However, his lack of critical discernment has rendered his recommendations fundamentally untrustworthy. I need the court to rule. How do I diplomatically convey to Casey, without breaking his childlike wonder, that without substantive justification and specific reasoning, I simply cannot invest my time in his copious sci-fi recommendations? I would like him to understand that enthusiasm alone is not a valid critical framework to justify further recommendations. Have any of you encountered this predicament? Please help me navigate this with friendship, grace. Please help me navigate this friendship with grace and acuity. End quote. That email comes in from Zion, writing into slashfilmcast@gmail.com.
Zion, and you didn't have to out me like that, Zion. I don't know what to tell you.
I mean, a couple things that are important to point out. First of all, I know a guy like this who does the same thing. His name is Devinder Hardwar. No, I'm just joking. But also,
unless it's things you like, yeah. And it's total shit.
But also, stepping in at the last minute to our film court segment right now is Jeff Cannata. Jeff, welcome back to the podcast. You're colliding mid segment with us, right?
Hey, I just I heard there was podcasting, and so I just I felt anybody a tingling in over the back here? Of my neck.
Yeah,
we desperately tried to exclude Jeff from the whole episode, and then he just showed up midway through the film court. So that was
you cannot perfect. Get rid of me that easy, Chen.
This is clearly what has happened. Anyway, okay, we're gonna start with Jermaine. Jermaine, you're an honorary guest here on the film court. Zion wants to know, his friend loves everything with the same amount of fervor. And Zion asks the question, hey, how would you go about telling Casey this information? I think there's another question to be asked before this point, which is, Should you tell Casey this information? Yeah. Like, should you break it to him? That's
the question. 100% have to talk to him about it. You have to talk to him about it. I find this. I definitely know people like this. Maybe not to that extent. And I run into this kind of personally. I'm Letterboxd, you know, like where I'm just like out of a movie. I want to throw a Letterboxd thing. I'm like, I love that. Do I give it 5 stars? It's like, but is that? It's like, no, but I gave like Raiders of the Lost Ark 5 stars or The Godfather 5 stars. Is this movie that I just saw that I loved, no matter what, worth 5 stars? And I generally do give it the 5 stars. So let's just call that masterpiece, right? Just because like that's how I feel about it at the moment. But I think at the same time, yeah, you have to realize like, look, there are different levels of excellence. There are different levels of excellence. Just like, but and I think the way that you kind of break that down is you have to explain, you have to be like, do you see that Andor is a different level of work than The Mandalorian? Do you see that Severance and Pluribus are working on a different level than Lower Decks or Discovery or something? Like, and maybe you don't. That's the thing. I've run into a lot of people that are like, no, I don't. Or a lot of people don't like that a show challenges them in a way like those versions do. And I think it really comes down to maybe vocabulary. Like maybe like that's just the only word they have to describe something. And also, you gotta like, and it is so like gatekeepy, but watch more movies, you know, like it really is. Like, you just need to like work that muscle. It's like, you know, going to the gym, which I don't know much about. Jeff, maybe let us a little more, but like, we gotta watch movies your entire life to be like, okay, I can see that I freaking loved, I don't know, like, I love Disclosure Day, right? But I know very, very oddly that like it is not up to the top tier of Spielberg when he was the best, right? And so like, so I can. There is definitely a fine line where like enthusiasm is great, like Zion said. But I do think you need to be like, dude, it's the also the boy who cried wolf, you know. Mm-hmm, if it's always the best, why is it not?
Right. So what I'm hearing from you, Jermaine, is ask some probing questions and then potentially encourage this friend to expand their horizons a little bit when it comes to the selection.
Absolutely.
Devinder Hardwar, any thoughts on this film court issue?
It depends on a lot of things. But I say if this is somebody who does not engage in criticism regularly, if they're not writing or talking about movies and stuff, if they're just a normal person enjoying things, I think it's totally fine to just like leave it
be. Let them enjoy things.
Let the childlike wonder persist. But you can start asking questions because what you really want is for them to show their work, right? If you think these things are equally good, okay, let's have that conversation. Why is this thing you think as good as this thing? And it's also really hard to compare something like Lower Decks, which is a, you know, great cartoon comedy, versus like Pluribus, which is trying to be like a serious, you know, drama with maybe some comedic elements. It's how you compare things is different too. I think ultimately you don't have to do much, but like Jermaine said, like it's by watching more things and specifically watching things that are not genuinely like great or not on like not on the positive end of the tomato meter, you know, like see bad things, genuinely bad things, have some things break you, and then start to see how you come back to it from there.
Be broken like us.
When you are broken down can you be built back
can
up
can you be
again?
Built back up. That's how it works.
Totally true.
Criticism, like the way I have come into this is, see, growing up as a kid, seeing Siskel and Ebert fight on TV, almost come to blows because of their opinions about movies and because of how strongly they feel about certain things and how much they want to defend their arguments and stuff like that. So I've watched a lot of movie criticism. I've read a lot, like growing up too. It was like the stuff, you know, not as great now, but the Ain't It Cool new stuff. And a lot of great people came out of that. Chud.com, the place where I used to read old Pauline Kael reviews. I loved reading New York Times reviews, things like that. Read criticism, teach it. That will teach you how to be more critical because it's a muscle you have to use. And if you have not flexed that muscle, if you have not gone to the criticism gym, you know, it's going to be hard to do that workout.
Yeah. And I think in this case, maybe sharing Zion could share reviews. Hey, I really like this Walter Chaw review.
Oh yeah, that'll get you.
Of this movie. Like, what do you think of this? Right, Jeff Cannata, any thoughts on this question?
Boy, I was nodding my head so much while Jermaine was talking. I agree with so much of what he said. I recently had an experience, not in the movie and TV realm, but in the book realm. And I will keep it vague, but I was talking to someone and found that they were an avid reader. And I'm an avid reader. I do a book club, very excited about books and novels, and found out more to the point, this person was into fantasy and sci-fi novels. And I was very excited about that. And I went, what are you reading? What are you into? What book are you into? And then they mentioned a couple of books right off the top of the dome, right? The go-to, like, this is the one I want to reference right now. And I went, ooh, rut-row.
And did you say that out loud?
No, but that's what my inner voice was saying. I tried to keep my poker face. But I immediately recognized,
yep,
I have no common ground with this person.
You just
want to exit the conversation. You're looking for ways out at that point.
What I do in that situation is I just nod and smile, and I recognize, okay, well, the connection point that I thought we had, we don't really have. And I can still high five the shared love of the medium, but recognize that our tastes are going to be wildly divergent. And that what I consider quality and what I consider like the minimum bar of quality is they do not recognize. Mm-hmm. Right? They are not in touch with. And so, like, we can't, feel like, well, I'm not going to Sisyphus this boulder up the hill.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? We're just far apart. And that's fine. Yeah. It's okay to be far apart. You know?
I feel the same way, Jeff. Sorry, Jermaine, what were you going to say?
I have like 700 things to say, but, you know, we have other things to talk about. But in terms of that last part, to go back to the listener, Zion, that doesn't mean you can't be friends. You just got to kind of know, right?
Yeah,
I think that's what it is. It's annoying.
You just literally cannot trust anything that person says about movies.
Kind of.
You know? And that's okay.
I have friends like that, you know, they hate everything that I like and they like everything that I hate. And I know that about it, you know?
Same. I record a podcast with them weekly, actually.
Right, exactly. And the other quick point.
You're throwing Patrick Klepek under the bus like that, Dave?
Jeez. I mean, Joanna Robinson's pretty smart, Dave. The other point, to Devendra's point, I think that was great about reading criticism and and watching bad movies and movies that are tough, right? Just things that are different. I do think, and again, this is old man Jermaine speaking, that the level of criticism these days is not up to what it was that you were discussing, obviously. So you can go on YouTube and watch a bunch of guys like argue it, and a lot of those guys are great, but a lot of them are not. And a lot of them are engaging on it in everything's a masterpiece or everything's a piece of crap just because they want their, you know, their clicks. So it's really different in 2026 than it was in 2006, even 2016. So it's a tough one for this guy.
It's not a problem, ultimately, though. It's like you're off to a good start because you are engaging in media, and it's really hard to get people to even do that, even if it's purely positive.
Very true.
And you know, there's something my wife says a lot, which is there's an ass for every seat, right? And so meaning that, you know, the stuff that I would find not worth my time is somebody else's catnip, right?
Yeah.
That was made for that person, and great, you know, that is loathsome or loathsome is strong, but you know what I mean? That I'm not going to spend my time on that. But then, you know, Dave Chen's going to watch some documentary about how 400 people were ruined by this, puking boat incident. I don't know.
This kitten that murdered the whole family.
It wasn't puking.
I think you're thinking of Trainwreck Poop Cruise is the
exactly.
The show you're talking about.
I'd spend my time on, but
I kind of subscribe to Devendra's initial sentiment here, which is, hey, the guy seems like he's having a lot of fun. Let him have fun. You don't need to like enforce your critical viewpoint on him. But I will say that as with what Jeff and Jermaine said, you also don't need to take his recommendation seriously. That's what I would do is just simply not pay attention to this person anymore.
Yeah, yeah. So, just don't listen to your friend.
Yes,
you know,
that's right.
That's all
right.
Just ignore
your
friend.
Lack of respect is the way to go.
Yeah. Be condescending toward your friends. The David Chen method. Please, I get it. I've
big how long have we middle been finger. David Chen.
Yes. It's been 25 years. I get it.
Indeed.
But also,
indeed.
Like I say, this friend, this is a wonderful little sprout of of somebody who wants to engage with cinema and TV and something. If you ignore it, you kind of like don't allow it to grow. If you think you have more critical aspects, you can slowly start to like help them become more, you know, better at that.
Yeah, stuff. You can nurture it. You can nurture it if you choose.
Yes.
If you choose.
And also, to be fair, really, just to wrap it up, Empire Strikes Back, Book of Boba Fett, pretty similar. Pretty similar.
So it's the same thing. It's the same thing.
All right. Thank you so much for your emails to /filmcast@gmail.com and send in future dilemmas to that email address. You can hear, you've heard a variety of viewpoints on this case today. We hope it helps you out, Zion. Let's take a break for a sponsor. We'll be back with our review of Toy Story 5 right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by Square, the system that fixes one of the biggest headaches in running a business. You know, starting a business can be fun, can be exciting, and then you got to run it. You're juggling payments, inventory, staff, scheduling, online orders, reports. Somehow you're still supposed to serve customers and have a good time and enjoy running your business? Well, that's where Square comes in. Square brings all of that other stuff into one place. Whether you're, you know, selling lattes or cutting hair or detailing cars or running a design studio, Square helps you run your business without running yourself into the ground. I love when a business has Square. There are some food trucks nearby that I like to frequent. There was a time when you went to a food truck, you'd have to shuffle for the cash in your wallet or maybe figure out, you know, which piece of plastic I'm going to find to pay for it. Oh, not anymore. Not anymore. The food trucks near me all have Square. It makes it so easy. I just do the contactless payment on my phone, a couple of clicks on the side of my phone. Boom, boom. I'm in. I'm out. I'm eating a delicious breakfast burrito. It's the best. And if you're actually the one running that business, you get the ability to take payments in person, online, or on the go. You can track your inventory and sales automatically. You can manage your team and schedules, and you can see what's actually making you money. And then you access those earnings faster with Square Banking. It's not just a point of sale. It's a system that keeps everything in sync behind the scenes. That's why businesses love it. You don't need a whole IT team. You don't need a degree in accounting. It scales with you, whether you're selling from a food truck or you're expanding to storefronts. Square isn't just fast. It's smart, transparent, and built for the way people actually run their businesses. There's no contracts, no hidden fees, no complicated installs, just tools that accept every major payment method, that let you see sales and inventory in real time across every channel, and help you access your earnings immediately with Square Banking. If you're starting a business or running one that deserves better tools, Square helps you sell, manage, and grow without slowing down. Right now, you can get up to $200 off Square hardware at square.com/go/filmcast. That's SQUARE.com/go/filmcast. Run your business smarter with Square. Get started today.
All right, folks, let's get to our review of Toy Story 5.
Bunny, screen time's over now.
Okay.
I want to talk to you, device.
Please, call me Lily.
Me and the toys have been working all summer to try and get Bonnie to make friends.
Yeah.
But then you had to ruin
it.
You're not even listening to me.
I'm always listening. See?
Now look here. Me and the toys have been working all summer.
Now in Spanish.
What?
Yeah, I got dibs on behind the dresser.
Woody!
Jesse, hello?
Is it as bad out there for toys as they say it is?
We're finding more abandoned toys each day.
We're down!
Tex invaded our house, too.
I don't know, Jesse. Toys are for play, but tech is
for everything.
I'm losing Bonnie to this device. You got a friend in me.
Welcome to the Filmcast review of Toy Story 5. I'm going to read the plot summary from IMDb. Woody, Buzz, Jesse, and the rest of the gang's jobs are challenged when they're introduced to electronics, a new threat to playtime. Joining us today for our review of Toy Story 5 is senior reporter from IO9 and Gizmodo, Jermaine Lucier. Just as a quick note, folks, I typically have seen the film that we're reviewing today. I have not, but I will be asking some questions, and I'm very curious about the thoughts of our panel today. So let's start with you, Jermaine. What did you think of Toy Story 5? Were you looking forward to this one? And if so, did it deliver?
Absolutely looking forward to it. Absolutely delivered. I am again old enough to have reviewed the first Toy Story when I was in high school. So I've been with this franchise since day one.
Wow.
And I've grown up with it in a lot of ways. I think the first three are kind of flawless. My favorite is 2 because of the toy collector in me. And I think 4 was solid.
It was a very flattering depiction of toy collectors.
Got a toy collector in me.
Exactly. Okay. Al's Toy Barn forever. I enjoyed 4, but it never really stuck with me. I remember liking it in the moment. This one is going to stay with me in a way that maybe not the first three will, but in a different way. I thought the concentration on Jesse was really interesting. I thought where the story goes, and we'll get into some spoiler stuff, was incredibly rewarding. There's a lot of thematic through lines that I found really interesting and worthwhile. I did think that it was a little overpacked at the beginning, and it kind of struggles to find its way. Everything in that was kind of enjoyable, so it wasn't bad, but I was like, why are we cutting to this when we still have this to happen?
Yeah, how do you get from here to where the two kids? Yeah.
Exactly, right? And so there was a couple bumps along the road, which I think the first three don't have, like, almost at all. But once this kind of, like, locks in, and again, we'll get into specifics soon, I was just, like, enthralled, you know, crying my eyes out, laughing hysterically, and yeah, like, really excited to even see it again, this one. Like, I'll probably try to see it again in theaters. I liked it so much.
Wow. All right. Well, Devendra Hardwar, you work in tech on a daily basis as a writer at Engadget.com. So the presence of toys the competition between toys and tech is probably something that you're keenly aware of. What did you think about how this movie handled that conflict? And what did you think of the film overall?
Honestly, this film gave me a lot of vibes. Remember back when you'd get like Aladdin 2, Return of Jafar or whatever, and it would go straight to video. You'd be like, oh, I know those characters. And you're kind of just riffing on things you've already done before, but it's in a different format. Except, hey, this is another big screen sequel. So it does feel really redundant. But as a parent of two kids, the idea of screen time, the idea of like, how do you manage, you know, using tablets and electronics in the modern era? That is the thing parents are talking about. And I think this movie ultimately ends up being a lot more thoughtful than I thought it would be. You know, you'd think like, oh, man, yeah, the toys versus connected gadgets. Like, obviously, there is a big rift there. And obviously, connected gadgets are bad. Tech is always bad. And the movie is a lot more thoughtful about that. And I think for parents of young children, it's also like a thoughtful critique of how you think about screen time, but also think about like proto social networks, because that's part of what's going on here too. So it is a thoughtful movie, but in the grand scape of Toy Story, it feels weirdly inessential is how I'm thinking of it. Like it's interesting that they're covering this territory. It's cool to see Jesse get like basically the starring role. And Joan Cusack is incredible in this movie, but I also don't think they know what they're doing with Bonnie. Like, that's the thing. Like, Toy Story 1, 2, and 3 were the story of a single kid and him growing up with the toys and his life experience. And I don't, like, Toy Story 4, the little I remember of it, was poor Bonnie, first day of kindergarten, completely alone, very sad, like, not having any friends. They have made no progression in this movie. Bonnie in this movie, also still very alone. No friends, trying to connect with other kids. Like, there is no growth for the character. Toy Story is more about the toys now than what the toys kind of mean for the kids. And I think like they have maybe lost a little bit of what made that first trilogy so strong. But, you know, otherwise, like, it's perfectly fine. Conan's in it. I think Conan is hilarious in this movie. So he has a really, really fun role. It's a good time. It's just not like something I'd run out to the theaters to see. It'll be a great movie to watch with your kids on Disney Plus.
Jeff Cannata, your thoughts on Toy Story 5?
Well, Dave, I guess you could say my thoughts on Toy Story 5 are best summed up in the form of a limerick.
Let's hear it, Jeff.
Hey, Pixar, I'd say my advice is don't bring up the theme of devices, if only to say make friends anyway and leave thinking that much suffices.
Interesting.
I think I'm probably the most negative on this of the three people that have spoken so far. I took my kids to see this. They liked it. They had a great time. So put that over here in a box because ultimately that's kind of all that matters, right? But for me, as somebody who reveres this franchise and will defend Toy Story 4 to my last breath, I think Toy Story 4 gets maligned unfairly. I think the movie's amazing. I agree with Davinder that this is not only just non-essential, it feels pedestrian compared to the rest of the Toy Story franchise, which is, I think, so elevated and really high art when it comes to storytelling that works for both adults and kids, that transcends generations. There are a few lovely moments in this movie, but I think they're too few and far between. And then the movie feels so disjointed. Jermaine kind of referenced this a bit. There is like a clear A story and B story like you would see in a sitcom. And the B story does not need to be in this movie. In fact, Woody and Buzz do not need to be in this movie. This feels like a spin-off film for Jesse, which is fine, but they should have just embraced that. And I think that's what gives the vibes that Davinder was talking about of it feeling like a, you know, Return of Jafar kind of straight to video 90s like situation, because it feels like this spin-off story. And what Buzz and Woody have to do in this movie is, I mean, it's fine to make the franchise not about those two characters anymore. That's fine with me. But I don't know why they get shoehorned into this. They don't feel like they belong in the story at all. And especially the Buzz stuff. I was like, what are we even doing? It comes out of nowhere. It feels, the movie starts with this weird kind of creepy Buzz thing. And then
you would not believe where this movie begins, Dave. If I told you.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I thought we were in.
It's in honestly, the trailers. It's in the trailers. But okay.
Well, I wouldn't have known that. But you know how the Pixar movies used to start with a short?
Yes.
I thought that's what was happening. I thought we were in a short that had nothing to do with this movie.
That is a bad, I would say that's a bad sign probably.
Yeah, and the payoff for this long walk, oh my God, we get such an extended long walk for that B story, and the payoff, I do not think is worth it. It feels very contrived. It feels very shoehorned. It feels like they had this lovely idea for Jesse, and they went, well, we got to get some Buzz and Woody in here. Let's figure it out. And it felt very forced to me. The other thing, and this kind of what I referenced in the limerick, is I disagree with Davinder. For my money, I don't think the device stuff is handled with any kind of it is a topic that is raised. And there is no, I don't expect a solution, but I expect some position to be taken on it. Mm-hmm. And it is literally, I walked out of this movie going, I've made a terrible mistake putting this as number one on in the summer movie wager. Because it's a bummer of a movie. As a parent, it makes me feel bad about myself. And I walked out of it going, oh God, I'm a terrible parent. Oh my God. And the crazy thing is, like, you know what's on a lot of those devices we hand to our kids? Toy Story movies. And Pixar movies in general. So it's like, what are we exactly saying here. Like, I think the issue is real.
A topic of conversation that we've returned to again and again on this podcast is the stuff that our parents thought were damaging as kids, as when we were kids. Mm-hmm. We would just love kids today did those things. So,
greatest dream. Yeah. So, just example, watch a narrative show.
Right. A narrative show. Play with toys. Right.
Right.
That would be better. Playing with toys would be better than playing with a tablet. Right.
That's
I think studies have shown. So
the movie raises all of these issues and really makes you feel there are shots in the beginning of this movie, like panning across the neighborhood and there's like lights in windows and it's just zombie kids staring at screens and you go, oh my God, this is horrible. This is where we are right now as a society. And I feel terrible about it. And then the movie's like, yeah, but friends, am I right? And it's like, no. You raised a terrible complex you've given me a complex about this thing that I already have a complex about. And then you just sort of give this pat, resolution to it that I don't
I'll talk about it.
I don't think it's a pat resolution, but continue. I'm sorry, go to Vindra.
We should probably get the spoilers.
Spoilers. But anyway,
I'll say before.
I think the movie is fine. I think the movie is fine.
Yeah.
I think if I wasn't comparing it to four previous Toy Story movies that I think are all far better than fine, I probably have a higher opinion of it. Like compared to just an average 3D animated movie that I'm going to show to my kids, I think it's perfectly good. it's perfectly watchable. And I have no problem. My kids had a great time. They came out of it. But my daughter does this thing. Anytime we see a movie, we walk out of it and she goes, Daddy, what was your favorite part? And I go, this time I went, oh man, I don't know.
You're like, Taylor Swift song still playing in the credits, so we're out of here.
Yeah, nothing came to mind.
Wow.
Like nothing. There were no like.
But you usually have it.
I'm usually like bringing up some funny thing that happened that I really stuck with me, and this time I was scrambling to come up with something, and I just think the movie is not up to the standard that the franchise has set.
I think what's interesting here, right, is. Obviously, we have a kind of three different levels here, it kind of seems like. I wonder if the fact that I'm not a parent and you guys are has to play into this. Because I saw things in this movie that maybe you guys didn't see because you were looking at other things, which is great, I think, about it. Which is, I think there is a lot going on, maybe too much going on thematically. Like, I really latched on to what Jesse was trying to do for Bonnie and what she ends up learning about herself. And I really really moved me. And I think the kind of payoff for that, how you don't think that is the moment, Jeff, is crazy. But then, and then also the lily pad stuff, like I thought that's the tech, the iPad in it. I thought it was a really interesting arc. I thought it was really cool. And I really think that like that character also learns things that Bonnie can learn, that Jesse can learn, that everybody can learn that made it more fulfilling and like a more like cohesive thing about, about friendship and about being more well-rounded. And so I thought that was a really interesting way to kind of to wrap up that storyline. But again, I think and maybe it is me projecting that we were coming at this in different ways, even though we're all obviously fans of the franchise.
We're definitely coming at it different ways.
Sure.
But, before we continue, let's take a quick break for a sponsor and we'll be back with more conversation about Toy Story 5 right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by SVS. The people that solve the problem that no one wants to admit they have, the problem that comes, you got that big TV, it's beautiful, it's massive, it's a portal to another world, vibrant, colorful, the blacks are deep black. And then you just rely on the flimsy little speakers that are built into that ultra thin slab of glass. They're not okay. That's not going to do it. They are not fine. Those postage stamp size TV speakers, they're doing their best, but they're fighting physics by trying to reproduce action sequences, orchestral sound scores, whispered dialogue. You can't do it. It's an impossible job for those tiny little things. But SVS exists to fix that very problem. They make speakers and subwoofers that bring real cinematic sound into your home. The kind where the explosions actually have weight, where music gives you chills, and dialogue doesn't sound like it's coming from your neighbor through the wall. And the best part is, SVS gear is designed for real people, real rooms, and real budgets. And they back it up with free shipping, free returns, and a risk-free in-home trial. So you can actually hear the difference for yourself with no risk. If you've already gone big on your TV, don't let it be held hostage by bad audio. Go to svsound.com and give your movies the sonic upgrade they deserve with SVS.
Devendra, you had some thoughts you wanted to say before we get to spoilers.
Before spoilers, we'll talk more about this in spoilers, but I do think the movie does actually come around to digital toys and connected toys in a really interesting way, in ways that parents are thinking about right now in terms of how you manage screen time, how you limit access to it. It is weird. The idea of play in this series, I think, is archaic. I think maybe that's part of the thing, too, because it's, yes, kids do sit down and play with toys and imagine things now, but it's a little different. And also, this does the thing, like Toy Story started in the 90s. Back then, the idea of parents playing with kids in a thing, not something you see too often in media, but now stuff like Bluey, stuff like modern TV shows and stuff like Parents Living, we're playing with the kids. We're interacting with, we don't just like put them in front of toys and like walk away. And Toy Story doesn't really have anything to say about that. It is still thinking of the idea of play as it used to be. And I think it's wrestling with new things, and play together with connected toys is a new concept that could be interesting. But it is fascinating to compare this to something like Bluey, which is, I think, doing better work talking about how kids play, how kids actually exist with old school toys, new toys, and how their parents are part of the ecosystem now, because parents were not much of a part of Andy's story, you know, like it was a very distinctive thing. So
part of that was because the animation technology did not yet exist for adult characters, and or part
human
of it
characters
was,
in
human
general,
characters.
Yeah, human characters.
Sid still haunts my nightmares.
Yes,
yeah, totally.
Sid,
totally,
but arguably more scary than the toys that he mutilated. but anyway, it sounds like Jermaine Lucier, huge fan. Devendra, pretty good, somewhat of a fan. Mm-hmm. And Jeff Cannata thought it was just okay, is kind of what I'm hearing from this review. But more to discuss, let's get to spoilers for Toy Story 5 starting right now.
I thought up an ending for my book.
It makes no damn sense.
Compels me, though.
I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end.
When I buy a new book, I always read the last page first. That way, in case I die before I finish, I know how it ends.
You can't handle the truth!
Inconceivable!
I came here to tell you how it's going to begin.
One question I had for you guys, right? The movie Toy Story 4 introduces this concept of lost toys, right? Like, mm-hmm. The idea is that Woody and these, they no longer belong to a person. They're off gallivanting on their own out in the world at this point. As with Toy Story 3, it did feel like, oh, wow, very likely this is the end of the franchise, right? Like, that is a logical endpoint for the franchise. How do you feel about the way that this movie, Toy Story 5, handled the concept of lost toys? Do you feel it like... did anything interesting with it? Did it pay it off in any way? Jermaine Lucier, any thoughts?
No, I mean, it doesn't really pay it off. It just kind of lets it go. It speaks some more what Jeff is saying, that the movie is very much Jesse needs to figure out how mm-hmm. to stop Bonnie from being tech driven. And she calls in Woody for help. And Woody's been doing that off screen. And then Woody's like, deuces. And Bo literally doesn't even help. Bo just like leaves with Duke Kaboom and all those characters.
It's weird.
Key and Peele, they didn't want to pay Key and Peele, so we see those characters again, but they don't say a word. You know, Jordan was like, and so, I mean, that was one of those disjointed things where it's like, oh, I like those characters. I like to see them. And it's cool that they're in there for a little bit. They get like one little action scene before. It doesn't really deal with it at all. It is Woody comes in to kind of help, but he doesn't really help. And mm-hmm. Buzz is trying to do his own thing, which is get married, which is endearing but weird. Then the thing that Jeff is referring to is there are 50 Buzz Lightyears that crash on an island. They're all like high tech Buzz Lightyears. And then they have this mission to get to Star Command. And it keeps evolving and changing until they interact with Bonnie, Buzz, yeah, so, and the other one.
Dave, the yeah. movie yeah. starts
tell me
on an island where I guess there's been some sort of shipwreck and yes. a box of
many dead humans. You see them floating. No,
there might be.
No,
there might be
serious tragedy.
It's a cargo box that crashed on
yeah,
a
and a box.
Yeah, how, what happened to the rest of the ship?
Yeah, what happened to the ship, Devendra?
Death.
Anyway, those things fall off ships all the time.
A box of upgraded Buzz Lightyears, who are sentient, arrive on the island and don't know their purpose. They have landed on a desert island, mm-hmm. and they are. All they know is their programming that they are supposed to, report to Star Command. As the way, you know, in the very first Toy Story, Buzz Lightyear doesn't know he's a toy.
Right.
You know? And so I guess all the Buzz Lightyears don't know they're toys.
Right. It's exactly the same thing, Jeff.
Yeah.
So it lines up perfectly.
There's this army of, like, zombie Buzz Lightyears coming. They're going to figure out how to get to the mainland.
Uh-huh.
And we're spending time on this. Uh-huh. We're spending some time
Minutes.
On this. Like
yeah.
seeing them get there, organize, figure yeah. stuff out. Like there's people like searching for them, ET style. It's weird.
No, there's not. Are there people searching for them? No.
I remember, is there not a scene where they're like...
There's a scene where they're like walking through the forest and a kid finds an abandoned one.
Oh,
and
right.
he finds his realization. He's like, oh, I should be with a kid. Kid wants to play with me. That is my purpose.
Wonderful, wonderful moment.
It's like the opening of 2001, basically.
It is so awkwardly put in there compared to this story of Jesse, who, maybe I haven't watched the first three Toy Stories in a while, but I really felt like, especially in the first two, Andy is an afterthought a little bit.
Andy is definitely an afterthought.
So in five, especially, this is really the first time we've seen a toy be like, I want to impact my kid. I need to change her personality, which I found endearing, also a little creepy. That was the big thing that made this movie. You guys both say it's kind of throwaway. That's where I think it wasn't. I think it's the first time that mm-hmm. Jessie, as like you said, you know, she's not human, but she has this humanity to her, is like, I see that Bonnie's on the wrong path and I want to impact that path. And I'm going to do everything in my power to do that. And then, you know, as a result, we see the impact that she had on, you know, Emily and stuff. And I found that really endearing and theatrical worthy. When you said Return of Jafar, I was like, oof, that's brutal.
It's just like, we're not doing anything new here. The Jessie stuff is kind of cool in that she recalls the previous kids that owned her and that played her. And we kind of see, there is a moment where that kind of comes full circle. And that made me tear up a bit. It's like, oh, actually I did serve a purpose and this kid did remember me. And that's it. But it's a real existential crisis for the toys, which is what Toy Story is very good at. So it's an existential crisis for Jessie. But for Bonnie, I just feel like her mission, Bonnie doesn't have friends. Bonnie doesn't know how to connect with people. But also, we did that in Toy Story 4. That's what I'm saying. And I'm like, mm-hmm. give her one friend. She made one friend in kindergarten. Kids make friends every week in kindergarten. you're not out there being a loner in kindergarten or first grade.
They're
making friends.
The whole point of the
movie
is that Jesse's trying to solve that for her, and ultimately
does.
Yeah,
but we did that again. I feel like we kind of did. But that, Bonnie was having trouble connecting with kids in Toy Story 4. That's what I'm saying. It's the same thing.
We don't know how long it's been. She's still like the same age. She, you know, Andy.
She's we've made no progress between Toy Story 4. Yeah. It feels like.
Well,
and I think that's
been
a valid criticism.
3 years after the events of Toy Story 4 is when this one
doesn't feel like that.
That doesn't feel. Yeah. It feels like it's 3 months, maybe.
Mm,
The toys have really become guardian angels in this movie, who are protecting the children and trying to, you know, mold them in down the right path. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I think it's kind of charming. And I'm willing to concede, Jermaine, that there are some lovely moments with Jessie. Like the scene where she finds the buried box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she has the revelation that she, you know, the kid was named after her. Like all of that stuff is lovely. And, you know, that's what I come to Toy Story for is that, you know, sort of generational nostalgia for a bygone era, that kind of wistful thinking of like, oh man, what to be a kid and you grow up and time passes, all that stuff. Like that's what the franchise is to me. And the movie does hit those beats. It's just, I think, full of a lot of other stuff that feels really clunky. frankly. And I don't think the comedy is great. I really don't. I think other movies have been funnier.
I think others have been funnier. I laughed a lot here, but probably not as much as the others. I did think, like you were talking about, the buzzes being kind of superfluous. And I thought that to an extent, but I think they maybe did work backwards. If they were like, what if we had this wonderful third act moment, if you want to enliven it, where we meld tech and our toys in a way. And what if we had 50 drones that were able to fly around and give you this big action beat? And I found that was really fun. I thought that was great.
I didn't care for it.
I didn't think it worked.
But.
Oh, yeah. But I'm saying, I think that's the point. Also, another, to your point of where the movie kind of sucks, I don't think it sucks, but a bad decision is that every other toy that isn't Buzz, Woody, and Jesse just literally gets shelved for 85% of the movie. They're like, see you later. Mm-hmm. And they put them on the shelf. And then they're just like, oh, what are we doing out
they're,
here?
You know? They're new friends. They're new other toys, and they're all connected.
And I love the new
toys.
The new toys are really fun. And I think I like that also that they bridge the gap between the kind of old school low tech versus the lily pad high tech. Mm-hmm. And they're like this mid tech. I don't quite understand how the potty training thing works. Jane was trying to explain to me, but as a non-parent, I didn't know how that helps at all.
Be glad you don't know.
Right, I know. It was probably a shitty situation. But.
Do you want to explain Jermaine's talking about?
No, I don't want to explain potty training on the podcast.
It's in the movie.
Well, Dave wants to know, Jeff. Dave really needs to know.
Yes.
We got to explain the whole potty training.
Well, Conan
O'Brien, this thing. How does
Conan
it work?
O'Brien plays a toy that is supposed to help somebody potty train. It has a one and a two, and you got to press it. And I guess it's a
like
way
a
for
reward
kids.
System.
Yeah, mm-hmm. to communicate or something, right? Yeah.
Reward system for going pee-pee in the potty.
And Conan's great. Conan made me laugh. Like that character, what he's doing, like it's genuinely a lot of fun. I want to follow up with what you were saying, Jeff, about like the tablet stuff, because I'm writing about this for Engadget right now. And I think it is very easy to take the idea of tablets coming into this world. Oh, man, the toys got to fight them. Got to get rid of screen time. And the movie makes a smart realization. Like, that's not going to happen. We live in a world where devices are connected. Kids will need to use this stuff. And there is some good to it, too, because they set up poor Bonnie and made her friendless and unable to connect with other kids. The tablet ends up being the gateway for her to find another like-minded kid. And they kind of bond together over their, you know, over Jesse, over like the new kid has Jesse for a little time. They get to be friends. And that's happened because of technology and things like that. That is a thing. You know, tech does connect people, maybe not at this age range. I think it's more of like slightly older kids where that sort of stuff happens. And there's some interesting like stuff here around like proto social networks. Like if kids are all
communicating online.
The
bullying was tough.
There's
it was,
bullying
it was
that comes
good.
Out of
it was,
like,
it was
yeah.
interesting, but hard to watch in a good way.
Yeah.
Go nowhere with it. They do nothing with it. There's no, they just kind of raise the issue of cyberbullying and don't.
Well, it's a way for
the parents.
It's a way for them to reject that friend group that the lily pads specifically did, as opposed to the one that Jesse kind of more curated in Blaze. And shout out to my favorite character in the movie, Jimmy Dean, the fat pig, who hopefully doesn't become Jimmy Dean, but it was adorably funny.
Yeah. That's a good joke. Just calling him Jimmy Dean.
We got to take one last break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more conversation about Toy Story 5 spoilers right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by BetterHelp. You know, summer used to be my favorite time of year. I loved it as a kid. Oh, summer was the best. Nowadays, now that I have kids of my own, summer can be rough. It can be hard juggling everything. It's overwhelming trying to get kids places, figure out activities for them to do, sitting around the house, trying to get things done, all this free time. Plus, then you got vacations and holidays and things coming up in the middle. You're trying to pack it all in. It can lead to a lot of stress. It certainly is for me. But I have found one of the things that helps me is therapy. Therapy can help you better understand your needs, feel more confident setting boundaries, and create a version of summer that actually feels good. And if you're thinking of giving therapy a try, why not give BetterHelp a try? With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. And it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. And BetterHelp does the initial matchmaking work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. All you do is fill out a short questionnaire that helps identify your needs and your preferences. And then BetterHelp leverages their over 12 years experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate, which means they typically get it right the first time. And if you aren't happy with your match, you can always switch it to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recommendations. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com/Filmcast. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/FILMCAST.
Mm-hmm. So, Jeff, what do you make of Devendra's argument about how this movie does not take a radical approach to tech? It doesn't say, like, never use iPads or anything like that, right? It seems like it argues for more of a middle path. What do you think?
It certainly does do that. I think he's absolutely correct. And it I think it is trying to thread the needle of, you know, exactly what Devendra said, which is, you know, we're not telling you these should be thrown into the dumpster. We're trying to find a happy medium of living with them, but also making friends IRL. And I just found all of that to be unrealistic and kind of just not satisfying to me.
Why unrealistic? Tell us about why unrealistic.
Well, because I think the issue is more, I think the issue as even framed by this movie is more intense than that, more dire than that. I think that is a pretty bland, pat answer, which is just like, well, make a friend in real life. It's like, yeah, obviously, but
it's so hard. This movie, like the journey it's hard movie, for her to connect with Blaze is like, that's the journey, right? And I thought was interesting. I'm sorry, Jeff, to cut you off here.
No, go ahead.
But it was like to kind of make that point stick, Lilypad commits suicide, basically, you know, like, which I thought was like really surprising, but ultimately kind of rewarding because she's like, no, I'm not good for these kids.
Well, she's here thinking she has all the answers to everything. She's like a consultant coming into company, being, I got all the answers. I don't care what you have to say. Do this, this, and this.
She's the McKinsey. She's the McKinsey of Toy Story 5.
Of this all. And she makes this group of friends. The friends suck.
Yeah.
Right. And I think the movie makes a smart point of being the parents see what's happening to Bonnie and the parents step in and be like, we're not doing this anymore. And it does make the case for like, it's not just kids and tech. It's kids and tech and parents. You know, the parents are the sort of like thing all this revolves around. You have to pay attention to how your child is engaging with anything, but especially connected toys.
I don't know. I didn't see much from the parents, frankly.
They take her to ice cream and they kind of put the iPad away and say like, let's maybe dial this down. And then that's the point that the lily pad is like, well, I did not help this girl. I wanted to help this girl. And
My purpose is wrong.
I honestly hadn't thought throughout the movie that like she had a genuine interest in Bonnie. She was kind of robotic, you know, literally and figuratively. And so at that point, when that character kind of developed, I was like, oh, I was really interested in that. And then, of course, her killing herself by throwing herself on the truck becomes the big third act savior where the old school toys meet with the new school toys to save this one. And then it's a happy ever after. I don't know. I thought it was all really, really connected and well done. But, you know, I'm disappointed you guys.
I'm glad it works for you. I'm glad
I picked Spider-Man. But I mean, that's just another thing. I did love this. I think it's going to be a massive hit, man. It's going to be a massive hit.
I mean, I'm sure it will. But I also feel like it's not the kind of movie that my feeling was as I walked out of it, this is not the kind of movie that people are going to want to go see over and over and again, but I'm glad to hear you want to go see it over and over again. So maybe I'm wrong.
Why did you feel like it was such a bummer, Jeff? Like you walked out feeling like a bad parent. Like why did this movie provoke that in you?
Because, I felt like the prevailing sentiment at the end is like, hey, this kid got out.
That's a real. That's kind of reductive, Jeff. Sorry.
The like, rest of the world is still stuck in it.
I mean, as somebody who hasn't even seen the film, I would be shocked if that is like what the intended message of the film.
Yeah. Oh, I don't think it's the intended message at all. No, I'm not saying it's the intended message. I'm saying that's how I felt.
Child who still embraces old school tech and low tech has fused the two in a way that it could inspire others, right? It was kind of my takeaway.
At the very end of the movie, the other kids are like, hey, what are you guys doing? You're playing with toys? And they leave their iPads and they cross the street.
Wow.
And they maybe will start to play together. That is the message.
No, the jerko kids that made fun of her across the street, they didn't have anything to do with iPads.
All
they
were kids jerko are jerks, kids Jeff. In the front yard. All kids are jerks. They all have the capacity to be better. That's it.
All right. Yeah. You know, hey, maybe I am the outlier here. I mean, clearly I am. But I just did not.
Maybe.
I don't think this movie rose to the moment. I don't think it. What I was hoping for from a Toy Story, because I have, I think, outsized expectations for this franchise, because it has, for my money, been home runs every single at bat. I really thought, hey, they're tackling a theme here, an issue that is really of the moment, that is really a franchise that is this big and this popular and this, you know, essential to our culture, tackling this topic. I really had high expectations of what they might bring to the table, and I just felt like it did not meet that standard for me.
I completely understand that, Jeff, but it's something I struggle with a lot. It goes a little bit back to that argument earlier. A lot of times, like, I have expectations for something and they don't meet it. And that, to me, hurts. And I'm like, dang it, why didn't they do that? And then it takes me some time. And this is not me, like, telling you how to feel. I think this is incredibly valid. But, like, me personally, if that happens, I'm like, I struggle to be like, but my expectation was is not the movie. So I need to look at the movie itself. And I think you are doing that. I'm saying personally, though, that's something that I run into. And here, my expectation was met, but I completely understand that if your expectation is not met, that is a big punch in the gut to try to get around. So I get that.
I mean, it's the context of the movie. The movie very, I think, strongly establishes the problem that it wants to talk about, right? It doesn't flinch in presenting the notion of the change in play styles for today's youth as being, you know, sedentary, detached, singular, you know, like it is really creating this, I think, horrific depiction of the state of America's youth. I think it's really going there at the beginning of the movie. And I just don't think it then reckons with the thing that it itself has established. I don't think it reckons with that to my satisfaction. And it sounds like it works.
You're right. It does pose a larger problem and solve it on a macro problem, solve it on a micro level.
Yeah.
So I agree with that. I think there probably could have been. At the end of this movie, I don't think Toy Story 5 is saying, like, the idea of, like, play with your toys and that'll be better is not a satisfying thing to that. But I think it's like what he said in the trailer that Dave played before this thing. It's like tech is forever. And so I think this is like a way for, we're going to get Toy Story 6. There's no way we're not, you know, like to integrate, to just evolve the franchise, evolve the toys that are in the Toy Story. The Toy Story has evolved. And I think for it to have, I think maybe it could deal with those expectations or those ideas in a different way. But here, I agree, it does not deal with that maybe in a satisfying way.
But I mean, go ahead, Devendra, please.
This is where I think the franchise's old school view of play kind of comes in. But it certainly hasn't evolved to the other good things that could happen from connected toys, from electronics. And my daughter does, you know, sit and play with her tablet quite a bit, but she's building these intricate worlds in Minecraft. She's doing things that do engage her mind and her creativity in other ways. And this movie doesn't have any path to say anything about that. Like, it's
totally.
The only way to play with connected toys is to play with them like old toys, where you use your imagination to do things. Sometimes the digital toys can be another you know, arm for your imagination, another way for you to express your imagination. And Toy Story doesn't understand that style of play at this point.
I think that's where it gets to, hopefully.
Yeah, so we'll see. Presumably might explore that in a future movie. Here's a bigger question, though, guys, is I heard a statement about, right, Buzz trying to marry Jesse. Yep. Is that a subplot?
Yes. It's just a thing for him to do. That's
it
all.
Really is. Yeah, it's just so tacked on.
Yeah, it is. Buzz and Woody are very, very secondary characters here, if not tertiary, compared to the new toys, which I think is also something, an adjustment for people. Jeff talked about it in his review.
Mm-hmm, right.
It's definitely an issue, and
but I think that raises some pretty interesting.
Bonnie marries all when Bonnie plays her toys. She marries toys like every time. Right. You see it like twice mm-hmm. in the film, and so Buzz.
But is his desire derived from Bonnie's desires though? Like, you know what I'm saying?
I think that's where he gets the idea.
I think he gets the idea from that.
Hmm.
And then in the end credits they have sex. Do we talk about? Oh no, I'm sorry.
They're more
hardcore. It's very strange. It's hard.
You gotta say to the end of the credits, but there's like
and all 50 Buzzes are in on it. It's really messed up.
Wow.
All 50 Buzzes are in on the end credits, but it's a little lighter than that.
The thing that I think is even weirder about this is that Jesse doesn't seem to be aware of any relationship with Buzz through most of the movie.
Oh yeah,
she's off on her own. Like they show flashbacks to the scenes from other movies where there is a connection.
Yeah, but there's like at the end she kisses him and like makes it like, oh, I've liked you this whole time too, and it's like we got no insight into that.
Mm-hmm.
Her journey is not. There's no boy. I wish Buzz was here. He's been my companion.
Right.
There's nothing. There's no. It is Buzz like weirdly stalking her and wanting to ask her to marry him. Like they haven't even dated. He just like, I want to marry you. It is. Well, I found it very odd.
There was a note from the studio early on. Buzz needs a goal. Here's a goal. Right. Let's not like write anything along the way to really, support.
I mean,
that.
I understand like Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head because they were designed as a couple, right?
That's
so
their
it makes
point.
Sense that they be married. Yeah. But the idea that I guess like
Woody and Bo
were a thing, yeah. Right? Like that was
that's
a thing.
Right.
Even though
that's what
they're
is,
not. They're
yeah.
not of the same toy line, right, right. as far as we can tell. And so that is a thing. But I guess
Woody and Bo like had a whole arc.
They had an arc.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? They had a relationship.
This is an arc through like four movies where Buzz Buzz has been awkwardly crushing on Jesse. And now that Bonnie's opened this up, this thing of marriage, it is just his stupid way of being like, I want to be with you.
Yeah.
It's tacked on.
Jesse's an independent woman. Like, she doesn't need to be
like
tied down.
Sorry, Devendra, go ahead. You go first.
No, I'm saying Jesse's an independent woman. She doesn't need to be tied down until she decides to be at the end.
Right, right. And it's not the story is yeah. that's Buzz's story. Her story
huge
is
loss.
I'm saying
yeah.
Bonnie.
Yeah.
Huge elf of feminism in this movie, it sounds like. But also like do you know, the idea that we're introduced to about toys is that their natural end state is to be playthings for their humans, right? Like they're kind of like pets for humans where like they're attached to their person emotionally, right? The idea that Buzz wants to get married implies that they have another natural teleology, you know, like to their
well, we've already
like,
established
lifestyle.
That
we've done
that. Woody and Bo get it on.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
again, we've done this before.
That's right. Yeah. So it's not like groundbreaking. But where do you think it ranks on the sort of their desire / purpose, like in their self actualization?
If Dave had seen the movie, this would not be such a big point. But Dave is like fixated now.
Well, listen, like,
what's going on
the movie,
with the Buzz? Like,
I've seen the movie. I don't know how that feels like a weird script thing. This feels
it's
like a movie
so
that was
weird.
Peppered with a lot of notes like Buzz needs a purpose. We can put in more Buzzes. We can like wrap this all together or something. Like it feels like a lot of notes. Let's not make the screen time.
Yeah,
too
they
harsh.
Never really get into this. I mean, like I said, I complained about the toys being shelled for most of the movie, you know, the Slinkies, the Potato Heads, Rex. But there is that realization that eventually that's going to happen to them, right? They're going to be thrown in the garbage. They're going to be put in an attic. And I think maybe like this idea of marriage is like they'll have somebody to be with in eternity.
Haunting.
In eternity. Yeah.
Haunting.
It's kind of what it is.
Yeah. Like they need someone to be like, because I remember Toy Story 2 introduced this really troubling notion of like, do you want to be rotting away in a landfill forever? And it's like, Jesus, like that's kind of what a toy's natural
fate
is.
Shout out Al's Toy Barn. I said it right at the beginning.
Yes.
That's why the series should have ended in Toy Story 3 when they all held hands at the furnace and be like, this is come to us, sweet death. That is the true ending for these toys.
It was the true ending.
They were waiting for that. Yeah.
I have one other point to bring up to you guys, which is Disney is a company that obviously produces a lot of digital content. There's freaking iPhone and iPad apps that they make. They're piping in content all the time to those.
They've
platforms.
Got a lot of games, games too.
They've had partnerships with companies that make companies like Apple and Google before. Is it too, Jeff, I guess this is mostly directed at Jeff, is it too much to expect a strong anti-tech message from a company that is deeply entrenched with the biggest tech players in the world?
Well, even what is in the movie feels discordant to me on that point. As I mentioned that in my initial remarks, is that, you know, I was sitting there going, what do people watch on their iPads?
Right. Yeah.
Pixar movies, dude. Right. Like that's what they watch. And it's like you're kind of, you know, the call is coming from inside the house, Pixar. it really felt discordant even on that level to me. Because Lilypad in the movie is only about sort of like social networking and like tap games, like the incessant tap games. There is no mention at all of like
consuming media
that you would watch is a content
which would be probably the primary use case of that device. Yeah. Probably,
certainly one of them. Yeah.
It's its own social network. I think it's trying to like a kiddie Fortnite, kiddie Minecraft, as opposed to like I don't think she can access TikTok on it, but maybe you know.
Yeah, there's no mention of like content.
Right.
At all. There's no mention of
like
watching
hey, we don't need to worry about. It's just these specific uses of.
We're trying to figure out who did this, okay? Like, who's
We're
making
all
the kids
to
addicted
out who did
to these toys? Okay,
who did this? It's not people watching movies on iPads, okay? It's not them watching little webisodes of a Toy Story on iPads.
Yes.
Anyway, all right. Any other thoughts?
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Any other thoughts on Toy Story 5, guys?
This is the last I'll think about this movie. That's what
I. That's the sad part. Is that it feels. I don't know. I don't want to poop on Jermaine's parade here.
I think you're completely wrong, so I have no problem with it.
No, I love that you love it. I wish I loved it. I was very excited about this movie.
Right.
I my kids had a great time, so I have to acknowledge that. They came out of it, you know, they were perfectly happy.
And they came out of it thinking, I guess iPads aren't that bad, right? Which is maybe what they want you to think.
My last statement, just to kind of go deep into spoilers, is that like, watching the movie, like it starts after the buzz thing. It starts with the Toy Story 2 Jesse song kind of throwback. And I was like, oh my God, are we going to actually meet Emily as like an old woman who sees her toys? And I was kind of emotionally preparing for that. And I think what we get that Emily named her child after her favorite toy was so much more emotionally impactful. And like, it killed me in a great way. And that was when I was like, Toy Story's back, baby. And I think I feel like you guys felt a little bit of that, but you maybe hadn't been on the ride as much as I had for it to land like that, man. But it landed for me. And I really
That's
enjoyed it.
That's certainly the best moment.
Yeah. And so, I'm very curious to see how it does.
But also how would you guys feel if you found out you were named after your parents' favorite toy? Would that,
it's kind of
I think that's
weird,
an interesting story. That's an interesting
Wouldn't
story that,
that
yeah, that
well,
tells
she did,
me something
she did
about
bury the evidence. She did bury the evidence in the yard. So it's not like it's like there's pictures of Jesse.
She did bury the evidence in the yard. It's true. I think this movie is a cautionary tale about writing your full address on your toy. You know?
Absolutely. Permanent marker is the win in this movie.
Do not write your entire like your OPSEC must be protected.
I just said like whatever year that Emily wrote that, like how there's no way that is still not faded completely. Mm-hmm. So she must have had like Sharpie 2000. I don't know what was happening.
They made ink differently back in those days, Jermaine.
Exactly.
Jermaine Lucier, it's been such a delight to have you on the podcast today. You want to let people know where they can find more of your work on the internet this week?
You can always find me writing on io9.com, which is part of gizmodo.com, and on my social media is at Jermaine Lucia everywhere. I was off most this week, so not a lot of new content, but it's coming. Don't worry.
Thank you so much for joining us, Jermaine. And at the end of the day, it is incredibly impressive that Andrew Stanton and Kenna Harris made a movie. And that's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of The Filmcast. You can find more episodes of the show at thefilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Our theme song comes from Tim McEwen from The Midnight. Our spoiler bumper and weekly plugs music comes from Noah Ross, who also edited this episode with video assistance provided by Kurt Mega and John Barry. Next week on the show, Supergirl. Call me when you want me to review Supergirl. Thanks so much for listening, guys. This is David Chan. I'm here with Devinder Hardwar and Jeff Kanata and Jermaine Lucier. We'll see you next week on The Filmcast. Goodbye.